Welcome back to the Drafting Table Podcast, hosted by Dominion Due Diligence Group. I'm Daniel Walton, and today I'm welcoming back Hannah Pearl to discuss a topic that we've been discussing almost every week for the last few months as HUD has transitioned to the 2020 Map Guide. If you remember a few months ago, Hannah joined us to talk about those big environmental changes, and one of them was the SHPO process. It's a topic that Hannah's an expert on and has spent a lot of time consulting with lenders and developers, and we thought this would be a great opportunity for us to get together and talk about the process in more detail so that everyone has a better understanding moving forward. So there's a few main things we want to talk about today, and that's the delegation memo and essentially what started this conversation. We want to talk about everyone's responsibilities, our responsibilities as a third party, the responsibilities of the lender, the development team, HUD, what is everyone's responsibilities and expectation? And then we have this new term, this qualified historic professional. What does that mean? Who are they? Where can we find them? How can they help us out? And then last, go over some tips, suggestions, and the overall time frame so that you can set expectations for yourself, for your borrower, for HUD, and just be more informed on this process. So Hannah, thank you for taking more time out of your busy day to join me. I can't say thanks enough for all you do for us and for our clients. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Daniel. I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Well, I'm very happy to have you here today and happy to have you as part of our team to help lead this process. So let's just kick it right off with the delegation memo. What is it and what has it created?
Sure. So the HUD delegation memo that was released in March 2021 formally allows lenders and their authorized representatives to consult with the State Historic Preservation Officers, or SHPOs, on behalf of HUD. So many third-party consultants, such as D3G, were already completing SHPO consultations prior to the release of the memo, but many other consultants were not and were leaving the consultation responsibilities up to HUD. In addition, there are some SHPOs who simply would refuse to accept any sort of consultation from a third party. They wanted everything to come directly from HUD. So the release of the delegation memo helped to really kind of formalize and clarify the process to ensure more across-the-board consistency in our SHPO reviews.
Consistency is something I'm hearing a lot of, and that's something that is very important for HUD financing, is having a consistent approach. One of the things that hasn't been consistent are the responsibilities from each person involved in the process. We get to a point where something, which we'll talk about in the future in this podcast, something triggers the need for some action on somebody's behalf. What are the lender's responsibilities? That's the primary listener of our program. What are their primary responsibilities?
Excellent question. For starters, the lender should communicate their preferences regarding the use of the delegation memo to their third-party consultant who is completing their environmental review. One thing to note is lenders do have the option to leave the consultation responsibilities in HUD's hands, but it's important to remember that HUD still must be provided adequate documentation to consult with the SHPOs, and that means that documentation needs to come from us, the third party. Lenders should be aware that leaving the consultations up to HUD can also delay obtainment of clearance from the SHPOs. You know, just lengthier review times. HUD is obviously going to be submitting things a lot later in the process than your third party would. Lenders should also communicate with their borrowers and development teams if any sort of specialized investigations are warranted for a project, most specifically architectural surveys or archaeological cultural resources surveys.
So this is where the delegation memo really helps us all out by keeping us informed and involved. You know, from a third party's perspective, we're typically doing the environmental reporting. We understand the scope of the project. We've often physically inspected the project. We have photos, we have details, we've had conversations. That sort of information, I completely agree, we should be a part of that initial correspondence development. Because if you were to leave this up to HUD, you could potentially wait many months before they had enough information to get to the point that we basically hand deliver them.
Absolutely. If it's not packaged appropriately for them to where, you know, they can look through, review everything, and put a cover letter on it and send it out, it's going to take a lot longer. So it's definitely in lender's best interest to utilize that delegation memo when it's appropriate, to the greatest extent possible.
Yeah, it's coming right back. I can promise you that. If it's not right, or if it's not, I won't even say right, but if there's anything that involves an extra layer of questioning, it's coming back. So do everything you can. Do everything you can to avoid that situation, because you may have already waited a little while to just to get that feedback. So again, the lender's responsibility, letting everyone know that the delegation memo is being utilized, and really rely on us, you know, the environmental professionals, to do our job and provide that initial consultation as far as we can. There's also the development team. I'm part of a lot of weekly calls that go on to discuss status updates for where plans are, where the costs are, how far along are the costs. And the developers always hear about this when they see our reports that they need to engage someone else. Can you describe to me what the developer's expectations are in this process? I know it's a little different for each group, but generally speaking, what's the developer responsible for?
The developer is responsible for, you know, actively acting on that recommendation of needing some sort of additional investigations. You know, we as the third party will communicate that to the lenders. The lenders should let their borrowers know. The borrower needs to actually go out and engage another professional firm to complete the rest of that. Archaeological or architectural surveys are not included in a basic scope for an ESA and ER review. So if an additional professional needs to be involved, they do actually have to, you know, the borrowers need to go talk to them, get a proposal, get them engaged, get that work underway.
That's something that hasn't really changed. If there's additional recommendations from the SHPO, we have to execute and include those types of things in our reporting, specifically in HEROES. But it's really up to the developers team and the lender and us to make sure that the correct scopes are being met and everything is consistent. Again, there's that word throughout our reports. So that eventually, once it is in HUD's desk, they can make those quick decisions. And I know you touched on it a little bit about, you know, SHPO, but, you know, HUD is obviously a big player in this process. They're sort of still in control, and they've designed the guidance that we're all following now with this delegation memo. Their responsibilities are what now? Because I've heard some misconceptions. I've heard everyone say, well, HUD just takes care of it all now. But it's not exactly the case.
It's definitely not the case. HUD is still solely responsible for consulting with the tribal historic preservation officers, or TIPOs. Those consultations may not be initiated by lenders or third-party consultants. Now, in the case of a RAD or tax credit project, the responsible entity is tasked with completing those consultations, but it can never come from a third-party consultant. So it's important to note, however, that letters to the applicable tribes must be prepared by the third-party consultants for HUD's or their responsible entity's use. So the third parties are still doing the legwork, they just can't actually consult with the TIPOs themselves. And in that same vein, should a lender elect to not utilize the delegation memo for a particular project, again, like I mentioned before, the third party is still responsible for preparing the letter and all the supporting documentation for HUD's use in consulting with the SHPOs. And one thing I do want to point out is that in the case of RAD-only or tax credit-only projects, or basically a project for which there is no FHA component, the consultation must be completed by the responsible entity. We cannot use the delegation memo for projects without an FHA component. So that is one sort of key difference between the different types of projects going in through HUD. Another scenario where HUD may have some extra responsibilities would be when a project is given an adverse effect finding by a SHPO, meaning that, you know, you're actively going to be removing some sort of components that have historic significance. In those cases, HUD must be involved with the resolution of those adverse effects and ultimate issuance of what's known as a memorandum of agreement, which outlines any conditions or stipulations that must be followed for completion of a proposed undertaking. All of that stuff needs to happen before you actually gain your full SHPO clearance. So when you do have a project where maybe a SHPO comes back with an adverse effect finding, HUD is definitely going to have to step in and take over in that sense.
Yeah, that sounds like it's something that could take some time.
Issuance of memorandum of agreements can take, I've seen some take upwards of 6 months. So that is another thing that it's not a scenario where you want to say, oh, we'll get to that. If you are actually given an adverse effect finding from a SHPO, you want to jump on that right away, you know, and get the professional involved who needs to work with the HUD, with HUD and the SHPO. And a lot of times some like local historic groups and public consultations and things of that nature, there's a lot of players that come into putting together one of those memorandums of agreement, and it can take, you know, several months in order to complete. So that is not a scenario where you want to say, we'll get to it eventually. You want to get that stuff engaged and underway as quickly as possible.
I mean, especially considering the fact that HEROES approval hinges on having that response, and you're not going to have it immediately, so you have to work through the MOA process.
Yep, so
everything sits at that point. So that's one of the things that I do see a lot is this. It's on the docket. We're going to talk about it every week, but there's not going to be any action quite yet. And I understand that. I mean, costs are being sorted out, project viability is being sorted out. It's been a crazy year and a half. You know, everything's always kind of in question. But as soon as you realize you have something that might potentially trigger an adverse effect, or you have another step, whether it's a cultural assessment or architectural review or anything that trips up the SHPO from being able to issue a quick approval, there's really no time to waste, because you're just putting your project in the hands of people, you know, people and organizations that are also very busy, and therefore puts the timing of the approval out of your hands, which takes something something you can be in control of. If you start early enough, you're now out of control. You don't have control over. Now, you mentioned there's a couple other things here, which is these qualified historic professionals. But before we talk about what their responsibilities are in these situations, let's talk about, Hannah, if you could tell us what situations could trigger the need for a qualified historic professional. That would be extremely helpful.
There are a bunch of them, unfortunately. So since release of the delegation memo and the new map guide in general, we're definitely seeing a greater need for engaging these outside qualified historic preservation professionals. So basically, new construction within or adjacent to a historic district, sub-rehab involving exterior rehabilitation activities such as window, door, siding replacement, things of that nature. Sub-rehabs, if your structure is over 45 years old, that's going to kick in, needing a qualified historic preservation professional. Also, demolition of a structure over 45 years old. Any undertaking involving substantial ground disturbance, such as like installation of utility lines, building foundations, etc. So essentially all new construction projects, and perhaps an occasional sub-rehab job if it involves ground disturbance. A couple other scenarios would be if the National Register eligibility of a property is unclear for some reason, also when adverse effects are expected. When you know you have a property that, you know, was built in the 1900s and you're doing some significant amount of work to it that would impact any historic elements that may still be present. Also, when a property contains known archaeological sites, or when a project is controversial in some way.
So you're pretty much confirming what my data shows me, Hannah, and I've been looking back at this regularly as the question started popping up on a weekly basis, and it's between 70 and 75% of D4s are going to require one. That's what I'm getting, because almost, you know, majority of your new constructions, because there's groundbreaking activity, so your new constructions check. Technically historic properties are 50 years or older, so HUD is kind of one up that by the 45-year mark.
Well, actually, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up. 50 years is what most of the state historic preservation officers utilize in their determination of whether or not a property is historic. There are a handful of states that go with the 45-year mark. So I suspect HUD just picked the 45-year mark so it could be across the board the same for everyone.
That makes sense. And that's good to know. That's one of the arguments that I've had is I've had developers say, well, we tried to get historic tax credits for this property but got denied. Why do I have to now jump through all these historic hoops and hire a qualified historic professional when this property isn't historic? And that's where this 45-year rule comes into play. So it's interesting, the things that can trigger it. But again, I'm seeing it as about 70 to 75% because all new constructions and sub-rehabs that are in or adjacent to these historic areas that are involving exterior changes, upgrades, repairs, siding, windows. But this, this kind of brings up a good topic, Hannah, that you and I have worked through a few times now, is the importance of a scope of work that is in or as close to a final state as possible when you go through all this legwork to get things in front of SHPO.
Yes, that's one thing that I cannot stress enough, that we definitely need to have a well-defined scope of work, particularly when you're talking about sub-rehabs for structures over 45 years old that do involve any sort of exterior work. Just an example, we did have a project a while back. It was a sub-rehab, pretty much completely limited to interior rehabilitation activities. Went through the SHPO fine, they got approval. A few months down the road, they came back and said, well, we now want to replace all of the windows at the property. Well, that triggered the need to go back to the SHPO because that scope of work had now significantly changed. And the SHPO came back with, okay, now this is actually an adverse effect. We don't want you to replace all the windows. So now they have to work through that whole memorandum of agreement thing. So it's incredibly crucial to know what your scope of work is going to be. And honestly, it's better to hold off if you're not quite sure, because if we submit to the SHPO and it takes 30 to 45 days to get a response back, and then later on you come back and you change the scope, well, that whole review time starts over again.
Right.
So you didn't actually save yourself much time by doing it early and saying, we'll go back if it changes. The other thing is that SHPOs don't tend to like to see the same project more than once if they don't have to. So it kind of puts your project at a disadvantage from their review times. Not saying that it always happens, but your project might kind of go to the bottom of the list on their desk. So something to keep in mind.
And then the infamous request of, well, since this is just a small change, you can get them to just sign off really quick, right? The hopeful request. And I wish we could. Thankfully, Hannah, you have great relationships with a lot of the SHPO personnel across the country. But that's unfortunately not how it works. They put it back in the back of the line, and they'll get to it in the next 30 to 45 days.
And yeah, if it's any sort of big wholesale change, it's going to need to go through the full review process. If you're talking about something like, well, we were replacing two windows and now we're replacing three, that maybe, you can get a quicker response back from the SHPO, but any sort of significant change to your scope of work is going to require a full re-review.
That is good to know, because everything's been in flux lately with construction costs and what you can do from a capital stack standpoint has also been, for all good reasons, enhanced over the last year and will be in the future with the 4% floor. So there's going to be that ongoing conversation of where are we going to land with dollars and what we can do with it. So there's that internal struggle of what can we afford to do? What's the best thing to do for the property? And then what's the best thing to do for regulatory compliance? And unfortunately, that's a battle that it will rage on, but we're going to do our best to keep things moving in the right direction for you and providing that consultation the best we can. But sometimes, like we've talked about, this kind of unicorn qualified historic professional, there does reach a point where we can't help anymore, and that's when this qualified historic professional comes into play. And I think that's who is this mysterious person, Hannah, if you could provide some color on the requirements for a qualified historic professional, I think that could answer a lot of people's questions.
Sure, and I get this question a lot as well. And it sounds more complicated than it actually is. Essentially, a qualified historic preservation professional just possesses a specific combination of education and experience that's detailed in the Secretary of Interior's professional qualification standards. And most importantly, someone who has substantial experience with these Section 106 reviews for shipboat clearance. It's, you know, again, that sounds kind of convoluted, but it's a degree in historic architecture, archaeology, something of the sort, plus a certain amount of years of experience. It's not nearly as complicated as it sounds. If anyone is interested, these specific credentials are outlined in 36 CFR Part 61. But trust me, these people are everywhere. There are tons and tons and tons of firms that have completely dedicated departments for this. So lots of the SHPOs have specific lists of people that they've worked with before that they know meet the qualifications. We can provide you those lists, you know, of who to reach out to. We can recommend a lot of different consultants across the country. So they're out there. It's just a matter of getting in touch with them and getting the proposal for your project and getting it underway.
Right. And that's a great point, that there are state-maintained lists. Not every state has one, but there are state-maintained lists with approved vendors that know exactly what you're looking for. In some cases, the civil team will have someone on staff that meets the qualifications and can take over and help out. There are options. I've had some developers and lenders really worried about finding someone that can help because this is so new. But there are people out there, and if you can't find someone, we can help. So let us help you if you run into that situation. So Hannah, thank you for explaining what that is, because it's a new term. It's a new person or company or firm involved in the process that hasn't been before, at least not on the surface, not based on the guidance. So don't be too scared. It's okay. We're gonna help you work through that. But Hannah, did you have any other tips or suggestions for everyone that's dealing with a SHPO, you know, in their mind crisis right now?
I mean, I think we kind of touched on the biggest ones. First and foremost, don't delay engaging a historic preservation professional when it's required. Project delays related to SHPO clearance can definitely jeopardize a project's chances of approvals. It's not something to keep on the back burner. Like you had mentioned earlier, we all understand that, you know, there are significant periods of time where you're still vetting a project to make sure that it's feasible, that this is the direction you want to go. And so it makes sense that you wouldn't necessarily want to reach out to one of those professionals yet, but don't sleep on it too long. You want to get that work done. You want to get that issue buttoned up. The more stuff that you have kind of outstanding and hanging out there, the harder it's going to be for you to get through your actual HUD review. And it, again, also definitely ensuring that the scope of your proposed undertaking is clearly defined and communicated to your consultants. Again, I know that's not always possible in the very early stages of a project, but in those instances, as I stated before, it is often best to hold off on the SHPO consultation until the scope is clearly defined. You know, I mean, that's not a huge deal to hold off. If it means a few extra weeks, it's in your best interest to just hang on until you have that scope actually fully prepared.
That's tremendous advice. You know, the site plan and the scope are more important now than ever for various reasons. Getting started early doesn't always mean getting your report early, and that makes your whole project move faster. It's really about having the right information at the right time, a little patience, and then the right team involved. So, Hannah, I just want to say thank you again for taking time to talk about SHPO. You talk about it all day, so thanks for taking a few more minutes to talk with me about it. Everyone out there listening, thanks for your time. If you have any questions, as you likely already know, Hannah's more than willing and capable and able of answering anything that could come across your plate. Please don't hesitate to reach out to us. We are always happy to help. We'll be back soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks, Hannah.